From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, February 7th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
Many parts of Maine and New Hampshire are without internet this evening. Spectrum tweeted just before 4 this afternoon that it was working to restore services as soon as possible. In a statement to WGME-TV, Spectrum's parent company, Charter Communications, said damage to the fiber optic network is affecting Spectrum services and that in Maine that's the result of severe weather. The statement says the damage in New Hampshire is affecting network redundancy. Bad weather has delayed the sentencing of a woman convicted of murdering her 10-year-old daughter, Marissa Kennedy, in a high-profile case that prompted changes to Maine's child protection system. The sentencing of Sharon Carrillo was postponed today because courts, like all state offices, were closed because of snow and ice. No new sentencing date has been set. China is slightly lowering tariffs on U.S. lobster, but industry observers say it's not enough to reboot Maine's languishing sales to that country. At the same time, the outbreak of coronavirus in China is hurting lobster sales abroad and domestic markets as well. Fred Bever has more.
Over the last 18 months, China ramped up tariffs on U.S. lobster to 42%, which all but killed what had been growing exports from Maine to that country. Then last month, President Trump's administration negotiated a new trade deal that included a Chinese commitment to buy more U.S. lobster. But whether China would significantly reduce the tariff was an open question. Now China says it will reduce its lobster tariff by 5%.
A 5% reduction in the tariff schedule is an insignificant change for the lobster industry from the United States.
Annie Salikas is executive director of the Maine Lobster Dealers Association.
We are trying to get a better sense from a variety of ministries within the People's Republic of China as to how this is going to continue to evolve. We are hopeful that we will at some point see something that is more advantageous for the lobster industry and for other U.S. food producers to be able to recapture part of that market.
Canadian lobster dealers have seen exports to China increase because Canada-caught lobsters are not subject to the punitive tariffs. But Salikas notes that the emergence of the coronavirus in China has limited Canada's sales there as well. The result? Canada is selling more lobsters into the U.S. market, which can depress prices Maine lobstermen get at the dock. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And school and business leaders are calling on the state to add more funding for career and technical education centers across Maine. At a public hearing at the Statehouse yesterday, more than a dozen supporters testified for two bills that would provide millions of dollars for equipment and capital upgrades at Maine CTE centers. Jason Stutheit, the president of DP Porter Contractors in Herman, says students need access to up-to-date equipment to ensure they've got proper skills to join the state's workforce.
We have far too many jobs available and not enough trained employees to take them. Let's take a bold steps to both move Maine's economy forward and train Maine students that will last a lifetime.
Governor Janet Mills has proposed $3 million for CTE improvements as part of her supplemental budget proposal. Work sessions on those bills have been scheduled for next week. In weather tonight, snow ending by midnight north, otherwise skies mostly clearing with high winds easing along the coast and lows in the low single digits to the mid-teens. Homelessness is a growing problem around the country, including here in Maine. Portland is currently working through the long and contentious process of building a new community shelter where people who are homeless can access services and stay on a night-by-night basis until they're able to move on. But for about 20% of the homeless, people who have mental illness, are addicted to drugs or alcohol, or a combination of those things, emergency shelters or longer-term solutions that mandate counseling or sobriety just don't work. For this population, a new approach has emerged: low-barrier, permanent housing with no strings attached. It's called Housing First, and experts say that as part of a larger strategy, it can save lives and, in many cases, save money. Don Wade's apartment at Houston Commons in Portland is small and cozy and packed with art, family photos, and a 32-pound black and gray cat named Jupiter.
He's my baby. So spoiled. He gets tuna.
But Wade and Jupiter haven't always lived together. For about 4 years, Wade was homeless, living on and off the streets in Maine and Massachusetts, so she had to rely on friends to take Jupiter in.
I had lost a few jobs. My mental illness got a little bit worse through the years, and I'm an alcoholic, so my life was falling apart. I couldn't keep a job.
She sometimes stayed at Portland's homeless shelter, but she says it was hard.
It's kind of scary sometimes. You know, the drugs, the stealing, the ODs, you know, not being able to sleep at nighttime because people are talking, they're in and out of their bags with the plastic noise, carrying bags everywhere you went, you know, and the bags get heavy.
Wade says her life now is very different.
I could take a shower anytime I want, eat my own food, take a nap in the day. I wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, instead of like a normal person gets up at 7, I like to hear the birds in the morning, look out my window, and have peace of mind before everybody else comes to. But it's the blessing of knowing that I'm safe, you know, I'm secure.
Wade is part of the homeless population that's considered most vulnerable, the 20% who are sick or have mental health problems or who are addicted to alcohol or drugs. Advocates say these people are the least likely to do well with requirements like sobriety or medication compliance, and they're also the most likely to use emergency services and to die while living on the street.
Anything could have happened. Rape, OD, dying, I mean, anything.
What we were getting exhausted by emotionally and physically and spiritually is putting on memorial services for people we had known for years and years who had died on the streets.
Mark Swan is the executive director of the homeless services agency Preble Street. He's been working with homeless people in Portland since 1991. He says after years of using an approach that required people to meet certain benchmarks before they could get housing aid, he and his colleagues decided to try something new in the early 2000s. And he says the deaths of chronically homeless people, who he and his colleagues knew well, were a major motivation.
We said we have to do something different. We have to do something better than just putting on these sad little memorial services in a soup kitchen.
Housing First is exactly what it sounds like. The idea is that people do better when they have permanent housing, and then they're more likely to access services like counseling and rehab. For some, this approach seemed counterintuitive. Why reward people who can't stay sober or reliably take their medications with a place to live? But the traditional strategy clearly wasn't working either. So Preble Street worked with the affordable housing developer Avesta and the Portland Housing Authority to create a Housing First building complex. Logan Place opened in 2005 with 30 units.
There was a lot of skepticism. It was a big risk, I think, for all three organizations. We talk all the time that that was a transformational, you know, moment for this agency, literally the night it opened.
Swan has called that night the best of his career. And today, Preble Street operates three similar residences that provide permanent housing and services for 85 people who were once chronically homeless. Gil Gagne is one example. At Houston Commons, he paints for 5 hours a day.
It makes me relax. I suffer from PTSD and severe anxiety. And my psychiatrist told me if I painted 5 hours a day, I wouldn't have to take medication.
When Gagne was homeless, he says he spent many nights at Portland's shelter, which is often overcrowded.
When you have PTSD and you wake up with someone's arm across your chest, it kind of messes up your whole day.
And the continual stress of homelessness makes it hard for people like Gagne to survive on the streets. But there are hundreds like him, and spots for Housing First units are limited. So when one opens up, a committee whose members work with chronically homeless clients meets to go through a list of names of people who could benefit from stable housing. Swan says it's a brutal process.
It feels almost like playing God. If you don't get one of those 30 units, it hurts our heart because we think we may be not able to help that person, and they may lose their life.
Housing First still meets with resistance, but at this point it is generally recognized as a best practice for getting people who are chronically homeless off the street for good. The city of Portland has committed to a Housing First approach as it plans for its emergency shelter. Ultimately, Housing First can also save communities money. For example, the Maine State Housing Authority found savings of about $23,000 in 1 year for the tenants in Logan Place versus money spent on jail, emergency rooms, detox centers, or mental health treatment. But Housing First isn't a cure-all. Swan says it's only part of the solution to homelessness.
I've worked and lived in Portland for almost 30 years, and I've never seen so many people sleeping outside. So, you know, again, we can work on all these solutions, but we still need shelters, and we still need shelters to be accessible and have the capacity to support people in an emergency situation.
Elsewhere in Maine, Bangor, Brunswick, and Ellsworth offer similar programs, and around the state, agencies work to get people into less formal versions of Housing First. There's also a bill pending in the legislature that would put 200 frequent users of psychiatric hospitals, emergency shelters, and jails into stable housing and report back on the results. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.